Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt. I'm a host, and with me this week is my other host, Joe Perez. How you doing, Joe?
Fantastic. It is an exciting week. How about you?
As we're doing this podcast, yeah, there's been eye injections. It's all been a rich tapestry. But I do think that since we are a Blizzard Entertainment discussing podcast, and Shadowlands came out this week, as did Diablo 3 season 21. But let's be fair. I mean, that came out on the 20th, and then they put out Shadowlands on the 23rd. So you got to play Diablo for a couple of days.
It was the shortest Diablo season ever. 3 days. Never would have expected it.
Yep.
It is a very interesting week, especially with Shadowlands releasing. And I think it should go. Should be said, a really smooth launch.
Yeah, I didn't notice any real problems when it finally came out. I mean, it launched fairly late where I am. It launched like 4 in the afternoon here. But no major...
A couple disconnects here and there. Some people were complaining, but for the most part, like, honestly, folks, tip that server crew, tip that services crew, because that was smooth.
I'm frankly amazed that in the middle of a pandemic where the vast majority of the staff is working from home, the people who handle server stuff are managing to keep it going. I'm sure that there are some people who are actually ambitious, but man, that's I think it was Russ Peterson did a series of tweets saying, you know, this is an amazing feat, and you really don't understand how amazing it is until you think about the sheer volume of stuff that has to go right for this to work.
Yeah, and not only that, but like the sheer volume of data that's being pushed at the moment the game goes live, and I'm not just talking about like downloading patches and stuff like that. Like, while our individual connections aren't, you know, they're insignificant to us, multiply that by millions of logins and millions of access requests at the same time, and like, yeah, there's going to be things like a little bit of lag here and there, maybe some disconnects, but honestly, that was absolutely brilliant. So I know a few members of the server team, and I know a few members of the Battle.net team listen to the podcast. This is me saying I appreciate the hell out of you. That was fantastic. So thank you very much for all of your hard work.
Yeah, since we're talking about it, one of the things that happened since Shadowlands came out is that some people have already hit 60.
Yep.
I think Mitch did to be
half of my rating core of my guild is 60 at this point.
Yeah, I am not doing that. I'm straight up not going to be pushing myself to get to 60 anytime soon. But I just don't see any reason to.
But you know what the weird thing is? I'm just leaving Bastion, and I'm at 54 and like a quarter of a level.
Yeah, I mean, when you get done with Bastion, it'll get you up.
That's crazy. That's higher than it was in the beta.
Yeah, I felt like it was going to happen, quite frankly. That's one of the reasons I'm not sweating it. If I decide to, like, over the weekend push for it, I'll get there. I mean, like, you know, oh, but you'll have missed out on several days of being 60. Like, yeah, and in a year, am I going to care? You know, think about Battle for Azeroth. By the time the second patch rolled around, were you worried about that? Here's something that happened in Battle for Azeroth that has colored my thinking on this subject. I pushed a Death Knight to level 120 as fast as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And played that Death Knight for like a couple of months and hated it and switched back to Warrior. And then I had to level my Warrior up. And then that became my main again. I was playing a Warrior as my main in Battle for Azeroth. And I was like, okay, that proved to me that I never have to worry about this. Like, you can always catch up. You can always do the stuff and get the gear and get the rep.
Yeah.
And it'll be fine.
There's always more time for it, right?
Yeah. There's going to be a year and a half of this. And then if for some reason you have a character that you didn't get to in that expansion, you can pick that character up the next one. Because this character right here, who's my first one through Shadowlands, I was not playing him in Battle for Azeroth. I got him to max level and then I left him there. I didn't do anything. He was wearing like item level 40 gear when I took him to the mall. Like, seriously. And quite frankly, it's a good thing I had somebody with me, because otherwise it would have been hell. But yeah. Well, I guess it was hell. Yeah.
Literally.
I guess it kind of is. Yeah. But yeah.
It's one of those things too, where like, I know some people are rushing, not because they want to just rush through the content.
Because that's what they like doing. And I don't have with anybody doing that. It just isn't me.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I was going to give a shout out to Wolf Parable in the chat there. Like, he's an example of something I've heard from other people, which is leveling as quickly as possible to make sure that the story isn't ruined for them, which I'm going to throw this out there. If you're playing through the game, be mindful of others that are playing a little bit slower than you, especially if you're tearing butt through leveling. Be mindful of the other players out there a little bit. Maybe try not to spoil things for folks. Let them experience some of the twists and turns. Even when we talk about this stuff on Lore Watch, we try to give ample warning and put spoilers up and give people the opportunity to walk away, just to make sure that, you know, it's not spoiled for folks, because some of this stuff is really cool to experience firsthand. And Bastion in particular is a really great place, like, to not have anything spoiled for you, but to spend time going through, because there's some really cool story elements in there that have implications for the rest of the expansion.
Yeah. One of the things I did, I posted an article today basically talking about the Maw and Ouroboros cinematics that you get. I don't want to say their typical job, because this is a step beyond what they did in Battle for Azeroth, which was itself a step beyond what they did in Legion, which was itself a step beyond. They've been improving their game.
Oh yeah.
With the mix of cutscenes and pre-rendered cinematics. And they did a really amazing job this time. There's a lot of them. There's a fair amount of cinematics. There's also stuff that isn't a cinematic, but that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's one quest in particular where Jaina Proudmoore, for lack of a better word, she just straight up makes ice sculptures of everything.
That's not a spoiler. That's just Jaina being Jaina at this point. We've lived through it. She's
being super extra about it, where she's making, like, here's what's been happening to us here in the mall. And she just does ice sculptures of herself and her friends being tortured. She just conjured up an ice sculpture of it. I'm like, wow, Jaina. And it's an amazing bit, because it shows you so much more clearly than if you just had Jaina talking about it.
Yeah, and
for 20 minutes.
And it's a little more immersive too than just, you know, having a cutscene exposition too, right? Because like, you can move around, you can walk around, you can interact with these things in sort of 3D, which I think is really, really cool. Like, that scene in particular is like, you can walk around it, you can walk through it. Like, it's really neat. Whereas like with a cinematic, you get whatever angle they wanted, right? It's really using that video game storytelling with the game itself as much as possible, and they knock it out of the park. And it's not just that scene. There's a lot of those, and a lot of those really early on in this expansion. And yeah, it's very impressive.
If you've seen by now, even if you haven't played, you might have seen online various ones. I'm not going to talk about them because, as you said, people are worried they'll get spoiled for it. But one of the things that's interesting is, because there are so many of these, and they're used to basically, they're there to keep you aware of who the characters are. And then the cutscenes are there to make you remember that you're there. And in many cases are the central character of all this. There's a lot. I'm really very impressed with what they're doing on the cinematic front and the cutscene front. The in-game stuff is just, you go back and you remember the Wrathgate, and the Wrathgate is the clear ancestor of all this, but they have taken the ideas from the Wrathgate and they have utterly magnified them. Like, instead of just having Bolvar stare up at the place where he left you as the only real hint that your character is involved, there your character is standing right next to people.
Oh yeah.
And that's something that they had trouble with for years until they figured out they could do the cutscenes. And it's really, really paying off in this expansion.
Yeah, and I mean, you can see that evolution throughout all the years. Like, I mean, even in the Mists of Pandaria, like, there are certain cutscenes where, like, certain members of your group would make it into a scene, not just the leveling stuff, but in raids, in dungeons, or, like, scenes.
Oh, the Thunder King destroys the bridge, and you're on it. Yeah, I remember that.
Like, stuff like that. Like, they've been sort of getting you involved for a while now, and it's sort of hitting those. Like, this is, to me, is, like, the culmination of all of that, where it's, like, you are part of the story in a real way. And, like, yeah, you were with that with Legion, and yeah, you were like that with Battle for Azeroth, but I think Shadowlands does it the best so far. And this isn't me, like, you know, with the shiny new object glasses on saying, yeah, this is the best thing ever. No, like, there's an appreciable difference even from Battle for Azeroth to, like, the quality is just so much better. And I think Terran and Crew,
it's also the way they get used, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the direction of it and where it's placed, I think, punches better, right? Like, or hits better, I guess. I don't know how to phrase it. But
yeah, Taryn and his group, everybody who works there, kudos. You've done amazing things. And they used to do, like, during the beta, there were always these, like, little moments where it'd be like, awesome cutscene happens here. And they have actually happened. They have had the awesome cutscene.
I can finally watch all those cutscenes that I wasn't allowed to watch before. But yeah, no, it's for me so far, it's been exceptionally cool. Yeah,
I think problem here is that talking too much about it risks spoilers, so we're just going to move on to the emails, I think, since that means we've got a fair amount of emails, and some of them are pretty long.
We do.
People came back to ask us questions, because people came back to the... And so if you have an email for the show, or just a question in general, and you don't want to email it, we have ways to do that too. If you've got an email for us, you can send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with a subject line, podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. Or you can go to our Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel, and you can ask there if you're a patron of the site, and you'll get, we look there first to make sure that we get paid. If you are not a patron, but you want to ask us a question via our Discord, you still can. You go to the Q Questions channel and you ask there, and we look there as well, but just after the because, you know, give patrons a fair shot for all the support. Joe's going to read it for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not at all. Our first one. I, Lord Soth, was a veteran of the Third War. I fought beside Arthas until his order to purge Strathom. Then I was later slain by him and raised as an accursed Death Knight, sworn to the will of what I now know as the Maw. Now as I venture through the lands of Bastion, seeking to unravel the mysteries of the Jailer, I wonder, would the memory purge of Bastion give me peace? To live a life of suffering, pain, and torment, perhaps... Bastion is one of the best places for Death Knights seeking to not carry the burden of the horrors that they are, to be cleansed of all remembrance of the nightmare of our lives. What are your thoughts?
Sure, go for it.
Maybe? So the question is it the memory that causes Death Knights to always feel that torment and pain that we talk about, where, you know, causing torment and pain is the only thing that gives them peace? Or is that just part and parcel with the fact that they're, you know, undead, raised in a very specific manner, that doesn't matter if they remember or not, that's what's going to happen to them. Also,
yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, although it does definitely seem to be implied that it is inherent to their nature to have to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just because they have bad memories. It's because the necromantic power that animates them requires them to make others suffer as well as themselves.
Yeah, read the new short story that just came out about the Death Knights in particular and the whole Bolvar and everything else, if you haven't already, our good friend Lord Soth. But it makes it very clear that that's a constant struggle, even for Darian Morgraine, who is arguably one of the more well-adjusted Death Knights. I don't know if that's how to really phrase it, but he's the most used to it out of the current roster, I think. And even he's been through heck and back. Even they talk about everything from, like, how he was able to retain control of himself, things like, you know, what happened at Light Tilt Temple, how that you know, factors into it. And the fact that even now he still struggles with this desire to do harm. He has, like, that's part of his being, to fight, to be aggressive, to cause and inflict suffering. Like, it's... So I don't know if Bastion would really purge that from them. I don't know. It depends on how that process works. Like, going through Bastion, we know that they rip some of that out of, you know, that soul. But how does that work with the Death Knight? We still don't know. It goes back to, like, the Forsaken thing. We still don't know what happens with the Forsaken when it dies. It could be the same thing with Death Knights. Haven't uncovered... I don't think we encountered a quote-unquote Death Knight soul in Bastion at all, did we? Out of all the weird NPCs we found.
Not yet. I mean, unless you're playing a Death Knight. And then again, you're not dead. Unless you are. I mean, Death Knights are dead. But you know where we're going with this. You're not in Bastion because you're a soul who's been sent there by the Arbiter. You're in Bastion because you're trying to unravel the mystery of what's really going on.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get the Kyrian to grasp this concept. Because, I mean, spend a lot of time and really get it. As far as, like we're talking about with Death Knight's forgetfulness, I mean, it might help, or you might start wondering why it is you just randomly feel the need to hurt people all the time.
No.
Wow, I'm a real jerk. Like, you know, yeah. Is that even going to be the case? Like, if they purge you enough, are they going to just will they eventually pull your soul out of your body and purge it entirely? Because keep in mind, all the aspirants and people you meet are dead people, as in they died and they moved on. They passed into the Shadowlands and their spirits were judged. Whereas your Death Knight isn't that. So would you even still be a Death Knight if you were a Kyrian?
So interesting enough, I'm going to pose a different thought on this. And Autoluke in chat brought this up, and I was going to go here with this as well. I almost think Maldraxxus would be more peace for a Death Knight. Not because it strips anything away from them, but Maldraxxus is all about being constantly in struggle and constantly being in battle. And if battle satiates the pain, it almost feels like an eternal life of battle would bring them the most amount of peace. It seems almost paradoxical, but it almost feels like Maldraxxus would be the best place for them.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with your point. It seems perfectly valid. It just comes down to whether or not it would work. Does inflicting suffering on the dead, like, does it sate the need? That's something I don't know the answer to. Like, but you're not really... If you're not inflicting suffering, do you get anything out of it? And that's, like, one of the weirdest things for me is, like, when I'm fighting the Kyrian and stuff in Bastion, like, okay, what happens to these guys when I kill them?
Yeah.
Like, do they go somewhere? Do they vanish entirely? There's, like, these lion bird things here, and I'm killing them. Why am I killing them? Does their ghostly self then show up?
Like, I just keep trying to tell myself, this is nothing but a sack of anima. This is nothing but a sack of anima.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about in terms of all this. I definitely think it would be interesting to find out if if a Death Knight's in Maldraxxus, they kill somebody, and it's like, yeah, you don't feel anything. Like, oh. Well, that's, I'm going to start going insane. Could somebody here count, please? Otherwise, I got to go. But yeah, we don't know. I don't think it'll even get brought up because, you know, to a certain degree, Blizzard just wants people to play the game and not stand around and have 35-minute, you know, ontological debates about whether or not the suffering of the dead is sufficient to
satiate
Death Knight.
You're saying that Blizzard doesn't want our discussions to be the norm? Say it ain't so.
I'm pretty sure. I'm fairly certain that they don't intend most players to sit around for like a half an hour.
But yeah, so I hope that answers or doesn't answer your question in at least a productive manner, Lord Soth. Our next question comes from Sars. Is it possible we will see Varian Wrynn again in Shadowlands? His story was tied up pretty nicely in Legion, but I find myself missing his presence and hoping he might make a small appearance in the Land of the Dead. Where do you think we could see him? Perhaps Bastion? Or the Maw? Thanks.
I honestly have no idea if Varian still, if his soul survived what Gul'dan did.
Yeah, because his soul
he got hit with Fel, and he got blown up with Fel power that turned him into like ash. Fel is inherently destructive to spirits, and so it's possible that his soul got scarred out of all possible rest and he's gone. Or maybe he's not. Maybe he is here somewhere. Keep in mind too that the four covenants are not the only places you could get sent in the Shadowlands. Like, as Joe is really fond of pointing out, there's a whole lot of doors in Ouroboros.
Yeah, seriously. People, go to Ouroboros. Look up into the sky when you go, especially when you go meet the Arbiter. There's doors everywhere.
So it's theoretically possible that when the Anima was flowing, that there were, like, countless, you know, areas in contact with the Ouroboros and that the dead could be sent to. for all we know, Varian's in some kind of like, you know, heaven. It's a great place to be. And he's there with, you know, he's not in, they didn't think he needed reconditioning. He didn't need to sacrifice anything else. He didn't need to serve anything else. His role was to do something else. I don't know, but it's certainly possible we could see him again if Blizzard has decided they want to do so. Sure, yeah, he'll show up. I would like it if he showed up. I'd like to see Varian again. I'd like Varian and Anduin to get the scene they didn't get.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. Like, it's one of those things I was thinking about, especially as progressing through, like, the story and doing the interactions. It's like, this would be a really nice way for Anduin to get some form of closure. You know, something I don't think he's going to get otherwise. And
you know, I honestly also think that Varian, that Anduin should get to meet his mother.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Who he's never met. So it would be great if the Varian basically shows up and says, you know, I've brought someone for you to meet. There's Tiffin. And she gets to see her son, who is now King of Stormlight. That would be nice. I'd like that to be well. But, I mean, I don't know. I'll shut up so Joe can talk about Varian.
There's some interesting things early on in Bastion that make it a possibility that we might see him later. And I this is not spoilery territory, but if you go through the entirety of the side quests as you're leveling, you'll see it. The Shadowlands is not untouchable by all the other forces like we've been led to believe. And we've talked about this a bit on Lore Watch with the light and void and everything else. It's entirely possible that there is a specific place that fell damaged souls go. There, you know, Ultanas is joking about it in chat, but there very well could be basically a mechanic shop for fell damaged souls where the anima can be, you know, still salvaged or repaired or whatever, because they've been around for a very long time. They've seen a lot. And that's one of the things you get a very like in the face feel for when you're playing through Shadowlands is like a lot of these beings you're interacting with are ancient. Some of the higher ups in Bastion have been around for, you know, eons. They've seen a thing or two. They understand a thing or two. Whether or not they understand it from our perspective, you know, that's a whole other thing. But they may have seen Fel before. There may be a place where, you know, Varian is healing or his soul is being repaired. But I would really, really like it for us to have Varian at some... I think it would be a... I don't want to say a missed opportunity, but I think it would be good for the story and good for Anduin to have that moment. I think that would do nothing but to give him further resolve. Anything else you want to add to that one?
No, I think we're good.
All right. This is a bit of a longer one. So our next one, Dear Watches. Sorry, but this one is a little long. Ooh, hey, hey. At the end of the initial Battle for Azeroth war campaign, Talia is finally introduced to Anduin, and we all learn together that she is Bolvar Fordragon's child. Anduin tells her that they have much to discuss later. Fade to black. Fast forward to the Shadowlands pre-patch event. Dakota Stormwind meet with Gen to discuss Anduin's kidnapping. Talia is present. Someone mentions Bolvar survived Sylvanas' attack. Whoops. Talia's response is outraged that she was not informed that he was even still alive, let alone that he served as the Lich King. If you click on her afterwards, she continues to blast Gen about all the conversations she had with Anduin about her father that all implied he died a hero. Period. So what the hell, Anduin? He seriously thought that secret needed to be kept now from Bolvar's own daughter? Happy leveling. Belloc of Dragonblight.
Yeah, thought the secret had to be kept. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He told him it was very important. Tyrion Fordring told him it was important. Yeah, everybody made it very clear that, you know, we didn't want anybody to know. The world must believe that Bolvar Fordragon is dead. That's what Bolvar said. Bolvar said that to Tyrion, and Tyrion told Anduin that that's what Bolvar said. Probably even had him click the statue in Dalaran that has the complete playthrough in case he wanted to see it. That's a bit of a joke. But I mean, this is not to diminish that Talia would likely be upset, furious even. I would be.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's probably understandable.
Yeah. And like 100% a reasonable reasonable response.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that Anduin just did it because he didn't have any, you know, he was like, oh, I kind of forgot. Sorry, guys. No, Anduin was acting the best he could. The position of king is extremely stressful, especially if you read Shadows Rising, you can see that it's starting to get to Anduin.
Oh, yeah.
Like
he's cracking.
He is not the guy he was a few years ago. He's made some extremely hard decisions. The decision to not tell Talia something that her father told Anduin, told Tyrion, that he didn't want done, it was probably like an easy decision compared to some of the ones he's had to make. It's like, you know, as opposed to, you know, having to lie to one girl and a very thin lie, because effectively Bolvar did die.
Yeah.
It's not like he can come back and be Bolvar in front of people. As far as Anduin knew, that guy was going to be the Lich King forever. Like, he didn't know that, you know, Sylvanas was going to come along and rip the helmet off his head and tear it into little pieces. He thought that this was going to be it. This was Bolvar's life now. What purpose would it have served to tell her? Oh, and by the way, your dad, he's not dead. He's just a Lich King. So, yeah, I don't have a real problem with Anduin not telling her. I totally get why she has a problem with it. You know, absolutely. If you're the girl who's literally never known your father and you thought, oh, I lost my chance to meet him. Oh, well, that's awful. But life goes on. And then you find out that this guy you've been talking to not only knew he was still around, totally could have told you that. So you could have gone and had something and he kept it from you and you don't know why. Yeah, that would be enraging.
You know, so I want to put this out there, and I've had a lot of people ask me why would Anduin and all the others think it's a good idea to keep it from her? Talia can kind of get wherever she wants to go. She is not a helpless person. She's very resourceful. She's very intelligent. And we've learned that just like her father, she is incredibly stubborn. And you combine all those things. What do you think would happen if she was told, oh, by the way, your dad's alive. Oh, and he happens to be the Lich King. She'd be at Ice Crown. She'd figure that out. She has like this knack of hearing everything that happens. And do you think that adventurers and the Alliance soldiers that were in Kul Tiras didn't talk about, like, the ones that survived the War of Northrend, that survived the assault on Ice Crown Citadel, wouldn't talk about it? Soldiers swap stories all of the time. Like, that's one of the things that's like, it's a trope for a reason. If she found out about that, she knows where it is. She knows that that's where, you know, Ice Crown Citadel is. It's pretty common knowledge. She'd show up. And if she showed up, what do you think would have happened? Either something that was undead would have gotten a hold of her or tried to get a hold of her. Something would have tried to use her as leverage against Bolvar. Or she would have been there at the exact wrong moment, such as, I don't know, when Sylvanas Windrunner shows up and starts housing Bolvar. Like, he sent his most trusted generals away to keep them safe long enough so that they could do what they needed to do should it happen. How do you think he'd feel about if his daughter showed up? You know, the child that he gave everything to protect. Like, that is one of those moments where, like, yeah, it would be great, but it would be awful for him. And it would be awful for her, and it would be putting her at this really incredibly high risk. Whereas not telling her, yeah, it bites. Yeah, it's going to feel really bad, but as things calm down, it's one of those things where she's going to realize that was probably the better choice, because she probably would have gotten herself killed. And then what would happen? I can't imagine Bolvar still with the crown, the Lich King crown, feeling that despair, you know, seeing that his daughter is dead. Like, do you think he wouldn't have, like, possibly gone uber, like, Super Saiyan emotional wreck and, like, succumbed to the power? He was already struggling with it without that. Like, it was the right choice, and it was a heavy choice, and it was one that Anduin and the rest of them made, and even they, like, they didn't have to like it, but it was the right thing to do. So yeah, it stinks, but it makes sense in context of what probably would have happened afterwards if they weren't careful. Ugh. Anything else to add to that one, good sir?
Nothing good.
Alrighty. Our next one. Dear Watchers, I have a few questions for you to ponder upon. Feel free to answer them if there's still a drought, or split them up if you like. Well, we're going to go through them. When do you think we'll see Azshara again? Do you think she might be in a position above the old gods this time, working for a Void Lord instead? Do you want to do these one at a time?
Sure.
Okay. We'll probably see her at the end of this expansion.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll probably get a catch up what she's been up to. I don't think she's going to be working for a Void Lord. I don't think she's going to be working for anybody. The next time we see Azshara, I think she's going to be working for Azshara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, think about it. She had to get tortured in Nyalotha for a while, but, you know, nonetheless, she's free.
Yeah, technically her boss is gone. Well,
yeah, gone-ish. He's not a problem. Whatever he is, he's not currently, like, you know, holding it over her for the first time in 10,000 years. It's like Rita Repulsa here. After 10,000 years, she's free. Now it's time to conquer Azeroth. And she's going to do it with giant monsters that she, you know, grows with her staff.
Oh yeah, she's 100% going to be Rita Repulsa.
Yeah,
that's after exactly 10,000 years, I'm finally free. Yep. Yeah, 100%.
That's where we're going. So yeah, that's going to be the next expansion. It's going to be, you know, Mighty Morphing as Star Rangers, and you know.
Listen, if I get the pilot of Megazord, and WoW, I will never play another game as long as I live. You heard that, devs, make it happen.
Like Pacific Rim, WoW.
Yeah.
But anyway, she definitely will show up at some point. I don't know if it will be at the end of this expansion. It might not be for a while. Keep in mind, it took Ashara like 15 years to make an appearance in WoW.
Yeah.
Unless you count the Cataclysm one.
Or, well, she made an appearance in Vanilla 2. Technically, there was a quest, but, like, it wasn't really, like, anything too special. I mean, I remember her quasi making an appearance. Cataclysm is where she made a face-to-face appearance, but even that was in time, not current one, so does it really count? I don't know. But my money is at end of expansion. We'll get some form of catch-up with what's going on, or at least a hint of something that's happening with her. Because while we're dealing with Shadowlands and dealing with what's happening there, I can't see an opportunistic and free Ashara not doing something. The next question on this list, there are quite a few references in the name tags of Diablo set items. Can you think of some that you appreciate extra? Top of my list is probably Alder's Watchtower being a druid set name in Diablo 2. Do you have a favorite set, Rossi?
Yeah, I like the Immortal King set, because it is a reference to the barbarian king that died before he got to the next Immortal King. The original Immortal King was, of course, Bol'Kathos. But yeah, I like the Immortal King set. I like Kanai's Cube. Quite frankly, Kanai's Cube has a really cool reference to somebody who worked on Diablo and who died. So yeah, I'm a big sucker for Kanai's Cube. I'd say, you know, there's, you know, the Tribal Guardian, which references Bol'Kathos. There's a ton of stuff like that. I mean, I'm a big fan of Diablo, you know, item naming in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I remember stuff like, I think Diablo 2 had the Blade of Alibaba. I think it was a Tulwar, if I remember correctly. But, like, that was a really obvious on-the-nose reference. I still like that. Like, there's tons of stuff like that where, like, all of that's good. All of it are great. Diablo 2 in particular, like, I think the unique sets were always really cool. I don't remember all of the references, but I vaguely remember multiple druid sets referencing real life stuff. But yeah, I Diablo is one of those things where I love the referential humor inside of it in an otherwise grim, dark world. So there's a lot there. Anything else you want to add on that one, or any other ones that you enjoy? All right, our next question. Do you think there's any chance that we'll fight a dragon, or at least encounter one soon, in the Diablo franchise? It would be refreshing to fight something that's not a demon or angel. Don't get me wrong, I don't get tired of fighting them. I mean, maybe? Like, there is kind of a dragon in the cosmology of the Diablo universe, isn't there?
There's Tragul, who's like a giant serpent-type dragon, who's supposedly the keeper of the balance, and who's the one who taught Rathma and the Seekers of Necromancy, and Mendelm as well. So yeah, there's that guy.
And there's a possibility with the story, the way that it's looks like it's shaping up for Diablo 4, that maybe that might be something that pops up, especially if Rathma is the one bringing Lilith back.
Tragul seemed very definitely not about Lilith's agenda. So if Lilith is the bad guy, it doesn't seem likely that you'd be fighting Tragul, even if you can fight Tragul, and I'm not entirely sure you can.
Except for the fact that we are technically Lilith's children in some capacity, maybe?
Yeah, but that doesn't change the whole, can you fight Tragul? And I don't know that the answer to that is yes. We don't know what Tragul is. We don't know where Tragul comes from. We don't know why he's the Dragon of the Balance. We don't know why it's so important to him to keep Sanctuary free of both angels and demons. Really don't know much of anything about Tragul. We know that it exists and that it taught people the necromancy. We don't know why.
Yeah. So maybe there could be dragons in Diablo. There's certainly enough room to have, you know, things of that nature or scale. So, yeah, I don't really have a better answer than that. The last question from our friend here, who is Shadow Petal from Korgal EU. Perhaps in Diablo 5, if we settle Sanctuary's love story in Diablo 4, we might go to something similar to Argus. The planet is controlled by demons, but the Nephilim come into contact with the natives who fight from the shadows with little success. That could be an interesting way to go forward. That or exploring the different domains of hell. Yeah, the other option is there could just be more lands to go to in the world of Diablo. We talk about this a lot as far as like in terms of WoW and exploration. The worlds can be as big as the devs want it to be, right? So like as you're creating the world and as you're going into new stories, you can have all the continents and everything that you've already experienced and all the lands that you've already experienced. And there are some pretty well-established Diablo maps for what we have right now, but there's nothing that says there can't be more, that there can't be other continents that show up or are shaped, right?
Quite frankly, even if they don't add anything new, there's plenty of places we haven't been. Like, we've only seen little pieces, and we haven't been to the Skorvos Isles, ever.
Were they talking about us doing that in Diablo 4, potentially?
They've talked about it before. But, I mean, we haven't been to the Skorvos Isles. We haven't been to Tien Tsa. There's lots of places we haven't been yet. You can still just go to those places before you have to add, like, a new side of the world or a new planet. Plus, we know that most worlds, like, Sanctuary's cosmology is not like our universe. Like, there's no guarantee that the sun that is in the sky in Sanctuary is a star and that the world orbits it and that there are other ones. That's not necessarily how it works. We know that other worlds were created with the World Stone, but they didn't last the way that Sanctuary has. So it's possible there's no other world besides Pandemonium, Heaven, and Hell to go to, and that any other place is like a demiplane. That's possible too. We don't really know enough about the cosmology of Diablo to really answer this question. In terms of whether or not we can go to a planet full of demons, technically speaking, Sanctuary is a planet full of demons.
Yeah.
And angels, and their offspring. So, yeah, who knows? They could certainly put in more lands on Sanctuary if they wanted to. They could just say that they were, like, you know, across an ocean or something. I mean, yeah, why not? They could totally do that.
Yeah.
I just think that even if they didn't want to do that, they don't have to. They could just plain old send you to places from Diablo that we haven't been to very often. I mean, we haven't been to most of Candoras.
Mm-hmm.
We've been to one area of Candoras where the king had his chalet. We haven't been to the rest of the country. We've only been to, like, that's the thing about Diablo is you only go to certain places. Diablo 4 is going to be unique in that it looks to be much more of an open world type experience where you go to a bunch of different places. I don't know how much of Sanctuary it's going to explore. So who knows? And also, remember, keep in mind, Diablo Immortal is coming out, and that might show different places that we haven't been to in a while.
Yeah.
So there's that to keep in mind, too.
Yeah, there's lots of opportunity for what's already been established. But again, like I said, if they wanted to go elsewhere, they could. So who knows? Our next question comes from Riptides, who is a Pandaren Death Knight on Shuhalo. Question for either podcast. Hello, watchers. After listening to the latest episode of Blizzard Watch and Lore Watch and the talk about how we don't quite know what the Jailer's motivation is, a few ideas popped into my head. They can all be totally wrong, of course. If we theorize that the Jailer was put in place by the first ones, is it possible he's breaking the Machine of Death to get one of them to return so he can free himself from his role? And further, is it possible that a loon could be one of the first ones, and specifically the one he is trying to draw back into the Shadowlands? With a focus on the burning of Tel'Drassil as opposed to other Alliance races groups, is he deliberately trying to get a loon's attention? As was mentioned by Rossi, the reason we haven't seen her yet despite everything going on in Azeroth is she is possibly busy elsewhere. Could all be nonsense, but maybe there's the seed of something there. Thanks again for all you do.
Well, I think it's pretty established, just if you've played through any of Shadowlands, the Maw sets up pretty clearly that he wants something.
Mm-hmm. He's looking for something in particular.
And none of the people that he was currently holding had that thing, but somebody might have it, and that somebody might be the people who have, like, gone through the Maw and actually were able to leave using, I'm just going to say it. Maybe this is a slight spoiler. There's a first one portal, and you, the player, go through it. And it's a surprise that you're able to. And that might be what he was looking for this whole time. That might be what he wanted. It certainly seems to be heavily implied that that was part of his plan. And now that it's actually happened, he's not unhappy. So yeah, we don't, it may not be as simple as trying to get the first ones to come back, but definitely he wants something, and that it's something it seems to involve. It gets mentioned multiple times that various people are afraid that the Maw is breaking down.
That's pretty early on. I don't think that's a spoiler.
Yeah, and that the Maw is breaking down and that the banished one might soon be free. And they're terrified of this. They do not want this to happen. Now, so far, we're under the impression that the banished one is the Jailer. But maybe it is, maybe it's not. We don't know for 100% sure yet.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly feels like it is. But, I mean, imagine that there's something even worse in the Maw that's been banished there, and that you know, might get out if the jailer gets his way. Maybe, you know, we don't know. I think it's probably just the jailer. I think they're talking about him, but we will see.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like, there's definitely a possibility that he is trying to get one of the first ones to come back. And
yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Like, this could all be bait for it. There is also the possibility that Alun is among them. But we've talked about this a little bit before. We still don't know what Alun is. We talked about it on this week's Lore Watch, which, if I'm going to go ahead and shamelessly self-promote, if you haven't listened to it, it should be going live right about, I think, today for Patreon supporters, if it hasn't already gone yesterday. So if you're a Patreon supporter, go ahead and give it a listen. It also was the basis for the really awful thing that I photoshopped together for the moon of Terminus as Alun with the, you know, slight modification at the prompting of Rossi.
I did not prompt you to do that.
You totally 100% did. Everybody heard you. It's recorded.
It's recorded. They know I didn't prompt you.
But it's possible that she could be one of the first ones. We don't know what those are yet. And I think that's sort of that's the big, or I wouldn't say the big, one of the big mysteries that we're trying to solve this expansion, right? Who are the first ones? What were they? We know that they had a hand in shaping the Shadowlands. We know that they were involved in casting the jailer into the Maw and forming that prison. So, like, were they something that ordered the rest of the universe? We talked about this a little bit on Lore Watch. Like, we know that the Titans didn't order the universe. They ordered planets. How did that happen? Were the first ones involved in that? It's entirely possible, as Alora for Real has pointed out in the chat, Asians, which Final Fantasy 14, yeah, could be 100% something like that. Who knows? We're going to find out more about that as it goes through. I don't know that the burning of Tildrassil was anything more than Sylvanas really doing that on her own. I don't think the jailer said, go burn that tree. At one point, I thought that that might have had some significance, since the world trees tended to be almost like stopcaps for places of really great power. And we've seen that in the past with like where they were placed and some of their purpose, like even in Northrend and with the great tree up there and some of the older ones like that. But the more I'm thinking about it, the more it feels like what Matt was talking about on Lore Watch, where it wasn't anything more than the demand for souls needed to be met. And this was how she could do pretty much that while inflicting the maximum amount of pain in you know, sort of that weird hopeless way, like trying to take hope away from people because she doesn't feel like she hasn't. It felt very retaliatory, not like a commander, right? Like it was her choice. But yeah, maybe. And maybe Alun is busy elsewhere. Maybe Alun will make another appearance later. I actually kind of hope she does. Again, because we know that there are ties there. We've talked about this before. We know that there are ties to Ardenweald. We know that there are ties to the light inside of the rest of the realms, like Bastion. The light even touches Revendreth. Like, it's very complicated. But yeah, could be nonsense. Could be something there. Maybe the jailer has a grudge match with Alun. Maybe Alun, it was made out of the piece that's missing from his chest. You know, maybe she's the bright side and he's the dark of the moon. Who knows? There's a million things that could happen, but we'll find out more later, I'm sure, as the expansion rolls on. All right, our next question. Hey there, Snowflake Observers. I noticed that WoW World has absolutely no technology progress in 10K years. What kind of in-game excuse for this can you come up with? Snuggle Kitten. I'm going to call BS on that.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's not true.
Like, you can chart it just going from Warcraft 1 to now. There's been plenty of technological advancements.
I mean, if you're saying that 10,000 years ago, the Night Elves had magic and a lot of it, they didn't really have technology, like, beyond a certain point. They didn't develop, like, you know, big steam engines and stuff because they didn't have to.
Yeah, they didn't need it.
The Empire of the Night Elves was magical to the point where the Pandaren sent them an empty box as a reference to just how dependent they were on magic, and they didn't get it. I mean, it's that they were that level of magic obsessed. Obviously, a lot of groups on Azeroth had very advanced technology. Like, for instance, the Titanforged, the ones that were up in Ulduar and in other Titan facilities, had very advanced technology that hasn't really advanced. But in terms of the people of Azeroth, oh, they absolutely have. If you're wondering why they're not more advanced than they are, keep in mind that there's been how many horrible world-shaking disasters? Like, The people, like the humans of Azeroth, for instance, spent several thousand years in squabbling tribes because the place they came from got sunk under the ocean and they were stuck in a little part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The Night Elves, like I said, Night Elves didn't have technology beyond a certain point and didn't care for it. They had arcane magic, and then when they dumped that, they went straight to nature magic. Like, they were happy with bows. Bows work. I got my riding cat. What do I need? But dwarves have definitely made technological progress ever since they woke up from their imprisonment. Gnomes, same thing. You can see there's lots of technology. There's technological advancement. It hasn't been a steady development. Comparing it to humanity, if you go back 10,000 years, humans for like a solid 9,000 were basically using pointy sticks. Like, we didn't develop anything more advanced than pointy sticks and a way to throw pointy sticks. We had atlatls, and then we got bows, and that was it for a long time. Like, for the vast majority of human existence, we barely advanced. It's just technology is something that increases applicatively. If this generation has this thing, now that thing exists, and maybe we can improve on it, and maybe we can't. A lot of times technology doesn't improve because there's no reason for it to.
Yeah.
Like, trains are still, like, trains are very much more advanced than they were, but they still are basically a big engine that pulls itself along a track. There's maglev trains and stuff like that, bullet trains, but they're still good old-fashioned, more or less unchanged trains from the 1800s that still run on our tracks because there's no reason for them to advance. They're only just now making self-driving cars. That's a technology that dates back to the beginning of the 20th century. Like, you know, 19th century, there were cars. It sometimes takes stuff a while to get more developed. Azeroth has definitely had technological.
Yeah. And I mean, like, and the gnomes and goblins are kind of my go-to for that, which is, I guess, sort of the point of their races existing. But, like,
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You're kind of an engineer, right?
I have a background that mimics that. Yes.
You ever think about the fact that gnomes are basically the concept guys? Goblins are the test to destruction yep. guys.
Yeah.
And dwarves are the actual engineers of Azeroth. They're the ones who do the actual building.
No, I'm gonna say that the so you have gnomes, I would agree, are like the concept pitchmen. Goblins are definitely R&D. I would say that dwarves are closer to DevOps production. So, like, yeah, that's pretty much how that works. Yeah, Audiluc, goblins are QA. They're research and development. They blow themselves up for science. Yeah, no, that's pretty accurate though. That's pretty spot on. But, like, yeah, I mean, they've had technology. Like, even the Tauren. Like, think about this. I understand that it's a very simple machine, but it's still a machine. The great lifts that are there at Thunderblood. That's technology.
The other lifts they've had in other places too. Yeah, you can't just ignore those. The Horde's got elevators all over the freaking place.
Yeah, and looking at where Warcraft universe in particular, even if we just stay within the games themselves, you know, the old naval units for the Horde used to be giant turtles. That was their submarines. That was their boats. Goblins had turtles. They don't have that anymore. They actually build submarines. You can literally go down to the dock at D'Zaralor, and there is a fully constructed metal nautiloid sitting there waiting to take you to Mechagon. Technology has advanced. It's not to our level. And that's one of the things that I think some people have been talking about is, like, you know, why aren't they at, like, where we are after, you know, so many thousands of years? And I think Matt has the right of it, because the world doesn't need to. In our world, magic doesn't exist beyond, you know, a sleight of hand or you know, whatever the case is. I wish it existed. I wish, you know, superheroes existed. I wish those were things. Those would be cool. But we had to compensate with technology to make up for a lot of that stuff. You're looking at a world where even their medicine is heavily magic-based. Like, yes, there's poultices and alchemy, and, you know, there are surgeons and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, a priest or a druid or a shaman or a paladin can use magic to mend bones. So why do they need to worry about x-rays or, you know, exploratory surgery or things like that? They don't. They're not necessarily. not saying it's always the perfect thing, because yes, there's battlefield medicine and stuff like that, but like, they don't necessarily need cars. They have teleporting mages and portals and hearthstones and a million different ways to get around. They don't necessarily have to worry about making these huge motorized things, but even they developed trains. The Iron Horde had trains. So technology does advance. This is not as quick as our world, because there isn't a need for it to advance as quickly as it does in our world. All right, this next question, unless you have anything else to add.
No, I covered it.
Okay. This one comes from our friend Melith. So the rare ice crown spawns in the pre-patch are all old Wrath dungeons and raid bosses that are being brought back by the Mossworn Kyrian, right? I assume that the Mossworn are bringing them back from the Maw. And if that's so, did all of those guys that we killed go to the Maw because they were irredeemable or because the so-called machinery of death was broken at the time? I was thinking perhaps that they all went simply because they were touched by the Lich King's power, which we have learned is derived in some way from the Maw. But would that mean that any Forsaken would go to the Maw even if things were still working correctly? Could this be why Sylvanas seemingly wants to bring things crashing down, because she realized she and her people had no hope of anything but constant torment under the current system? Am I rambling at this point? Sweet smile. Thank you for all that you do. I have an opinion on this one.
Share it.
Y'all remember that he had a whole recruitment camp for Valkyr, right? And like, Valkyr working for Helya, that whole thing. Like, if we kill these things, it's entirely possible that those Valkyr just swooped in, grabbed their souls, and shoved them in the Maw for later. Especially if they're doing Helya's bidding and Helya's working with the Jailer, that would make perfect sense. Here are these super powerful entities that the Lich King raised. Let's steal them back. Let's take them and ferry them into the Maw, hide them away in Torghast till later. These are my prize collections for right now. Oh, things are happening. The world has been shattering. Go, Mossworn. Go wreak havoc. You know, it's entirely possible that's what happened, and kind of what I think happened, because I don't think they would have gone to the Maw otherwise. I think they were literally dragged there by the twisted Valkyr that were working for Helya the entire time and not actually working for the Lich King. And I think it boils down to something as simple as that. What do you think?
I mean, I think that you good point about Helya. It's possible that they weren't in the Maw. She might have had them in her realm.
That's entirely possible, too, because she could have had a pocket Shadowlands dimension. We talk about that a lot. There could be other ones.
We know that she had a realm. We've been to it. We've seen it.
But she could have also had another one, right?
Would she need another one? They could have been in that one. We didn't see the whole thing.
True.
Just because we went to one part of it. It's a realm. It could be huge. She could have had them all there.
Yeah. No, that's I can see that point. Yep.
But the other possibility is that they are returned from the Maw, which I don't really... Almost all of the undead that are... we saw during the rare spawn event were intelligent ones, except Trollgore. I'm not sure what you'd say about Trollgore, but huge part on Trollgore. But seriously, I think that most of them were intelligent undead who served the Lich King willingly and thus pretty much put themselves in Maw danger just from that. Especially if the power the Lich King was summoning was that of the Maw, and we know that was something that they didn't want the Arbiter to know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite possible that all of this would have to have happened after whatever disrupted the Arbiter. And we've now seen the Arbiter get disrupted. We saw, thanks to one of those cinematics we were talking about before, we've seen the exact moment that it happened. We don't know when it was in relation to anything else. We don't know what that was or what caused it. But we know that it happened, and then the Arbiter just stopped. And that's, to me... It feels like that would have had to happen before a lot of this other stuff happened.
I would agree.
And we don't know who was behind that. I mean, the Jailer might just be taking advantage of it. He may not have caused this. We don't know. We don't know where that came from or why it happened or how it happened. So I'm willing to suspect that there's actually something even bigger going on here in terms of these returned various Scourge figures. The Scourge is very definitely in the pocket of Big Jailer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like,
straight up. They've been his from the beginning, and I'm pretty sure that those people could have very well gone to the Maw and then been released when it served the Jailer's purposes, which is really interesting because the big thing the Jailer loves to talk about is how nobody escapes from the Maw, and then meanwhile he's sending people back from the Maw. So it's interesting.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, and I hate to say this because it's going to be sort of cliche at this point, and you can probably put this in one of those little buttons that you know, you press and it has plays a soundbite. But we're going to find out more about this as we progress through, obviously. But we're starting to get more questions now than I think we even had beforehand. And I think that's kind of cool. Circling back to something we said at the top of the podcast, the cinematics that were put into the game now that we're getting to experience are showing us things that in the beta we didn't get to see. And that's adding more context to a lot of items, such as the thing with the Arbiter and stuff like that, which happens pretty early on. But that's starting to color the story, and that's starting to shift some of the perspective of what we think potentially happened or is happening, and put things in different lights. As the expansion goes on, obviously, we're going to learn more about it. But I think it's fascinating that even with what we already know, that could shift just based off of those cinematics and what story bits we didn't get to see or were told until now. So stuff is still new. We're still learning. We're still going through. But yeah, and I think I would be surprised if there's not a nod or an explanation somewhere in this expansion, possibly in Torghast, with how those souls came back to Asgard. So, but yeah, that's all I got. Do you have anything else you want to add today?
Nope, I think we're good.
All right. Well, friends, thank you very much. And Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like an early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. The urge to yell "time for podcast" there was overwhelming, but I resisted it. I'd like some praise. If you guys have an email for the show, please send it to podcast@watch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch so we know it's for this show. Or you can go to our Discord channels, to the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel or the Q Questions channel, and ask your questions there as well. Thank you guys very much for being here with us on the Watch Podcast. On behalf of myself and Joe, I want to say thank you next week.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.